What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode is the first episode of Season 4. To everyone that's new, welcome. And to everyone that's been here for a while, thank you so much for sticking with us. This episode features Dr. Jonathan Yamas, DNP. This man is California-raised, California-bred, except for a brief stint in the Sunshine State. Dr. Yamas had a very interesting journey through healthcare, which eventually led him to practice in the field of psychiatry. He's a mentor for anyone pursuing the field, and has published several articles regarding topics in nursing and the pursuit of further education in nursing. He is also a published musician. You can check him out on iTunes via John, J-O-N, Raphael. Have a listen and learn about his unique journey through nursing. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you enjoy, and welcome to Season 4.
How you doing, man?
Oh man, can't complain. Just enjoying Sunday. How's the weather out there on the West Coast?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's not too hot, which is always great for Los Angeles, you know? So right now it's around 84, so can't complain.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got back from downtown. I took a little walk downtown Asheville just now. It was pretty nice. It's a little hot, but it was nice. It's beautiful out and everyone's out and kind of coming out of the shell a little bit in the city, so it's nice.
That's good. Are you guys still doing all right despite the whole coronavirus? Are you guys starting to open up a little bit more?
Yeah, and luckily where I am in North Carolina, this whole, like, I'm in the west part, they didn't get hit that hard at all.
Oh good.
Kind of like where my mom lives in Charlotte, that is that got hit hard. That was like a lot of, that was the most cases in North Carolina, I think. But where I am, it's pretty chill. I think everyone's up in the mountains. They're kind of just living their life, not really spreading as much, so it's good.
Good, man. Good.
Well, I know you guys got hit pretty hard, right?
Yeah, I think right now California, I think, exceeded New York in terms of number of confirmed cases. So, yeah, we're not doing so great, unfortunately, with trying to contain this thing. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm hearing that they're considering maybe locking down the city maybe one more time to try to get this right. So, but we'll see. Hopefully we don't have to get to that.
Yeah. Now, I know that you said the cases are going up, but are the deaths going up as well, or is it kind of staying?
You know what? I think the deaths have remained relatively stable despite the number of confirmed cases. So I think New York is still leading the country in terms of number of deaths. So I think for the most part, California is doing okay on that end. But I think people are just so scared and, I guess, fixated on the number of confirmed cases. But for me personally, I think as long as the deaths remain relatively low or they're somewhat declining, I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, I'm happy with that at least. So, and you know, New York, they want to be the best at everything. So at least they're winning this race.
I mean, California and New York, man, they're both the two states that always want to win in everything. So
you guys are competing for the worst right now, I guess, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
That's funny. So, and you're from LA originally, right?
Yeah, born and raised in LA.
My dad's from Palmdale, so he's out from out in the desert. So I used to go there a bunch in the summers as a kid. It's a cool place, man. Mm-hmm. It's so different than like growing up in North Carolina. It's so different.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, I'm born and raised like a city boy, so LA is pretty much my home, and so it's one of those things where I can only imagine how it is to live like in North Carolina and how the dynamic is living in there. So I mean, do you like it? Do you prefer that type of setting more as opposed to like maybe in Palmdale where your dad is?
I didn't mind Palmdale as much, but like LA is fun to visit for me. I loved visiting, but like I used to live in Miami before med school, and then I lived in Fort
Oh, gotcha.
Lauderdale for med school, and like it was cool, but it's just not for me. Like at least not Miami. I could do Fort Lauderdale, but like the big cities, man, like LA, Chicago, Boston, NYC, stuff like that. I just don't think I could swing it. I don't like taking forever to get places, 'cause that was
Got
Miami
you.
so bad. Stuff like that. I don't know. I do like my privacy and stuff like that as far as
That's
living
good.
goes.
That's good, man. To each their own for sure.
Have you lived anywhere else besides LA?
Yeah, I actually lived in Orlando for a little bit. I lived there for like 6 months because that was where I kind of got started as a nurse. I started working there as a new grad at Florida Hospital, which was their ER residency program. So I did that for a little bit, and it was just a completely different change in terms of living wise because Florida, obviously the weather is a lot more humid. It's a tropical climate, so it took some time to get used to, and also everything was a little bit more spread out. As opposed to LA, where everything's a little bit closer, it just takes obviously a little bit longer because there's more traffic. But yeah, Florida just was a little different for sure coming from LA.
That's funny you said that Orlando's more spread out because like you're absolutely right compared to LA. Orlando's still a huge city. It's still like really dense, but yeah, compared to LA, it really is like a rural setting almost compared to LA. That's funny.
Exactly. I think everything was like always 20, 30 minutes apart. You know, because everything was like geographically, which is really spread out, and because of like the like swampy kind of like tropical climate, it was a little different. You know, I would always come out and I would see overcast, and I would assume that it's a little bit cold, but then when I step out, it just hit that hit of that humidity and that hotness. You know, so
Yeah,
it took some time to get used to it for sure. But
that's
yeah,
funny.
I still love LA, man.
That's funny. Yeah, man. I liked my time in Florida, especially like maybe November to January. Dude, it's awesome. It's like 80 during the day. It's like 55 at night. You can still go to the beach during the day because there's plenty of direct sun. It's beautiful, but the rest of the year is like it's just hot. It's just hot.
And the thunderstorms is crazy when it gets like when it gets rainy and the thunder is like happening. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty intense. I don't think we're used to that, you know, especially if you come from California. You don't see that a lot, so.
You're used to the drought. You're not used to the floods, right?
Yeah, you're not used to the floods for sure, man.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, having a dog down there too kind of sucked because during like hurricane season, which is like half the year, it's raining every day and she's crapping on the floor. So that was kind of sucked, but we got through it. You know, it's better now. So.
Good.
So yeah, so you said you lived in Orlando. Otherwise, you've been pretty much in LA.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, like 6 month stint that I was in Orlando, Florida, I mean, I was pretty much born and raised in LA. So, yeah, this is pretty much home to me.
Sweet, man. And that's one of those places, it's like, why leave? You know, what do you got to look for? You know, it's a cool spot. It has everything you need. So.
And I got a lot of that, believe it or not, from all the physicians and the residents and the nurses that I worked in the ER. They when they asked me like, oh, where am I from? I was like, oh, I moved from California, from Los Angeles. They all looked at me like that perplexed look, like, why?
Yeah.
Why'd you move here? And I'm like, well, I wanted to get into a residency program. I felt like that was important for me, especially starting off my career as a nurse. And I definitely wanted that extra support and training. But they're like, you couldn't find anything in California? You couldn't find anything in LA? Like, they gave me that look, like, why come here? But I guess it's just it kind of shows kind of like the difference, you know? Like, if you were in Florida, I guess you want to maybe move somewhere else outside of Florida. So I just find it interesting from someone who came from Los Angeles, California, to like move there for work. Like, for them, it just wasn't worth it, I guess. So it's kind of
That's
interesting.
true, yeah. I don't know how California is, but I got the vibe big time in Florida that it's like, why would you come here? Like every time I'd go places, like, oh, I'm from North Carolina. It's like, why would you come here? Like, I like
Yeah,
Florida.
it's yeah, it's it, yeah. I was surprised. I thought they would be like, "Oh yeah, like Florida's cool," but like 99% of them, they all questioned me and my decision. It made me feel like, did I make the wrong choice? You know, in terms of like moving here. But no, it was an
Yeah.
interesting time. I'm glad I got that opportunity to like learn during my time there. So.
That's sweet. That's cool. So, and then what was kind of, I know to be a DNP, you had to have several different stops along the way. What was kind of your route starting from like undergrad to where you are now?
So yeah, so the thing about I think what frustrates a lot of people who are not in the nursing profession or is not considering a role into nursing, that there's so many different avenues. You know, for medical school, it's pretty straightforward, cut and dry, right? You can pretty much, as long as you have 4 years of undergraduate, but as long as you hit all the prerequisites, you can pretty much apply to medical school. And then once you complete your MCATs, you apply to medical school. But for nursing, there's just so many different avenues. Like, you can get into the LVN program or the ADN associate degree or the BSN RN, right? So I think that's why a lot of people are just so confused, because everyone calls themselves a nurse, but there's just different, I guess, in terms of levels that maybe confuses a lot of people. You know, the training and the type of education that you get, either if you're an LVN or associate degree or bachelor's degree or master's or even doctorate prepared, it's like there's different levels as opposed to how you want to pursue that route. But in terms of the DNP route, I mean, like I said, it's still relatively new. I think it started around like 2008 or around that time, where they kind of implemented the Doctor of Nursing Practice program, and they pretty much created it to kind of create some parity in terms of healthcare professionals. You know, for physicians who are obviously all doctorate prepared, and then now we have pharmacists who are all doctoral prepared, as well as other professionals, whether they're psychologists or dentists, everyone is doctorate prepared. For nurses, we didn't really have anything other than the PhD route, but we were seeing that there was a lot of there's a huge disparity between the researchers and the people who was actually implementing that research in clinical practice. So that's why the DNP was created, because it became a clinical doctorate, because we were finding out that a lot of the things that we were doing on the bedside were pretty much 10, 15 years old, right? As opposed to the new research that's actually out there. So for me personally, I was never one that I wanted to become a researcher. You know, research in terms of finding new research and conducting new research, it wasn't really something that interested me. But when I found that there was a clinical doctorate that focused more on translating that research into evidence-based practice and actually bringing it to the bedside, I think that was more kind of like my cup of tea, so to speak. So in terms of how I went about it, I went just strictly to my bachelor's. I got my bachelor's degree. It took me about, I went to an accelerated bachelor's degree program in nursing that took about like 2.5-3 years, and then I worked as a nurse for a while, for about 2 years, and then I went straight into my doctorate program, because the doctorate program that I went to, it was an accelerated doctorate program in a sense where you, as long as you have your bachelor's, it was 4 years, and then you get your DNP at the end. So the path that I took was the quickest, most efficient way, and the most streamlined possible, as opposed to me starting like from the bottom. Like, if I decided to do my LVN, then my associates, then my bachelor's, then my master's, then my doctorate, that would have taken me probably like maybe 15, 20 years of schooling. But the fact that I went straight from my bachelor's into my doctorate, I think overall it took me like seven years, in addition to like completing all of my prerequisites, you know?
And you got to work throughout that too. It wasn't just like go to school only, you can't work.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously as a DNP student, I mean, I was already a registered nurse at the time, and it was important that in order to support myself financially, right? Because oftentimes in graduate school, it's harder to find scholarships and financial support if you do decide to go to graduate school. So I knew that I wanted to keep my skills up, and I definitely needed to work to kind of help pay off the loans that I accumulated during undergraduate, and to also lessen the burden of myself to kind of, you know, not come out with a huge debt out of the DNP program.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know, like, that's one thing I missed. Well, of the many things I missed during medical school, besides like sunlight and freedom, was like, like income. I mean, that was a hard 4 years, man. So that's cool. That's a cool thing about nursing route, is almost whatever venue you go to and whatever point you stop at along the way, you can still work throughout. That's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, and you're right. I think it'd be difficult, because obviously people who go into graduate school, the majority of them, they have family, they have, you know, they have a wife or a husband or partner, or they have other things that they need to do in order for them to stay afloat, right? So it would be difficult to kind of just go to school full time and not work because it's tough, especially not getting some sort of financial income coming in. But for some people, I guess it just depends. Some people, they're very fortunate that they have family members or friends who can support them completely, so that can focus them on school. But for, I guess, for the majority of us who doesn't have that luxury, it is nice to know that we can still work while going to school.
Yeah, that's a cool deal. That's a cool thing about, I think nursing is probably one of the, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think that's one of the only fields really where you could probably just go, can progress your academics and still work, I think. I know like medical, for example, it's, that's it, you're in school, you don't work. I think PA
Oh
school kind of
yeah.
like that. So that's pretty sweet, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like, my brother's in medical school, my girlfriend's in medical school, so I mean, everyone, hearing their stories kind of firsthand, it's really it takes a lot of time out of you. So I don't even think I don't even know if there is some students in medical school who do work, unless you some friends or colleagues that did work in medical school.
I know one of my classmates, the first semester, she did like, what is it? Like the auditing of like medical records or something like that. But she only did it for a few weeks and she was like, I can't do this job anymore. I'm gonna die. You know what I mean? It's
It's
like,
hard. It's hard. It
yeah.
really it takes a lot of time, man. I mean, like, I know how difficult it is, like, in terms of kind of like the stuff that you guys are forced to kind of study and know and learn. So it does take a lot of time out of you. And not to take anything away from nursing as well, but I mean, we do have a lot of stuff that we have to study as well. But with that being said, obviously they're two different professions, and I guess the required amount of things that you need to learn, it's just different. You know what I mean? But
Yeah.
yeah, that's the great thing about nursing. We can still work, which is great.
Yeah, man. It's not like you're working for pennies either. Nursing's, I mean, I feel like, so my mom's a nurse, and so I always understand the value. It's just that, it's not pennies. It's not what it should be, but it's still good bread. So that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. I think that's one of the great things about nursing is that you can make a pretty good income if you just once you have that experience under your belt and once you're working in a specialty that can provide that. But for the most part, nursing is a very good, stable profession for sure, financially.
And you said your brother and girlfriend are in med school. What years are they?
Yeah, my brother is he just finished a step one, so
Oh, man.
he's just finished now. He's on, I guess, third year, right? Because once
Yep.
you complete step one, you're now third year. So yeah, he's officially started third year, and he's starting clinicals right now. I believe he's in his OB-GYN rotation, so
Oof.
he's telling me that he's bringing babies into the world, which is exciting. And then my
Yeah.
girlfriend right now is she's currently studying for step one, so
Oof.
she's definitely stressed out for sure. Yeah, so I mean, obviously with those two people in my life, I mean, like, I know firsthand, just kind of like listening to them, just like how stressful that can be for sure.
You're kind of giving me flashbacks like PTSD, man. I'm like, oh God.
With step one, right?
Oh my God. I remember those days living in the dungeon and just studying all the time. And like, honestly, where your brother is though is probably the coolest part of med school because you just spent all that time not doing anything but like existing to study. And then now you get to go like apply it, which is cool. So third year was really fun. And fourth year was even better because you just kind of live and do what you want. But like first and second year, man, it's like
It's a tough, right?
You gotta be like masochistic and just enjoy pain, I guess. So.
Yeah, that's what I kind of heard too. I heard, like, as you progress through medical school, like the last 2 years, and then especially the fourth year, it's a lot more laid back. I think the first 2 years is the one that a lot of people struggle with for sure.
Yeah, I mean, not to take the, I hate to take the topic off of your route. I just wanted to share this with you because, like,
Yeah,
hopefully your
of
brother and
course.
girlfriend will have the same for fourth year. Like, I had a couple mandatory rotations, but otherwise, man, I was just living my life, man. It was awesome. For the first time since med school started, I was like, oh, I get to wake up when I want, sleep when I want, play video games, do whatever. It was awesome. So I'm looking forward to that for them, but I'm glad it's them, not me, and not you either. You're done. We're both done.
For sure. I definitely, personally for me, I think, I've had some colleagues before when I just finished my nursing and I was considering kind of like going and getting my doctorate in nursing. It was one of those things where I even considered, like, should I go back to medical school? But then obviously, since my brother was going through that process, he just told me, like, bro, like, it's not worth it, man. You already finished everything in nursing. Just stick in that, man. He's like, I wouldn't, he's like, this is not really something that I would really kind of like encourage to anyone unless you're truly, truly, like, passionate about, working in medicine specifically. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's right. I mean, like, I already spent all this time in nursing, and I feel like I align more with nursing. So I just felt like it just made more sense for me personally just to kind of just continue that route, you know.
Yeah,
but
it
is interesting. I don't know, I don't think I would have been able to survive, like, just seeing him study for MCAT and everything. I mean, that one was stressful for sure, just watching him do that.
Well, that's funny then, because it's good that, you know, your brother likes you, because if he didn't like you, he would have encouraged you to go. Yeah, man, go for it. You'll love it. It's super chill. Like, that's what I would do to my worst enemies. Like, they had to be the bottom of the list. But yeah, man, go to med school. It'll be perfect. You'll love it.
So. Yeah, no, it really takes, I think it takes a really like, special person to go into medical school. I mean, like, it really is. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. And I mean, like, you really come out of there. I mean, I know the debt is just kind of crazy. And then I know for, as a resident, I mean, you don't really make that much money, which sucks, because I know you get, the hours are crazy and long, so I mean, you don't really see the benefit until you, after, you know, after you graduate and after you finish residency, which is how many years, you know. So that's the hard part.
Luckily mine's only three, but you know, it's good. Funny too though, because you know, like we were talking about nursing and working through it, you know, my mom, when she went to nursing school, I was tiny, and then she graduated and then she worked through nursing school. She worked at a bank, she was a teller. Mm-hmm. So she's like in school working as a bank teller, she graduates and she's a ICU night shift nurse. And
yeah,
so she
wow
had me, I was like a baby, I was like five still, and I'm a nightmare, just like ball of energy. And she would try to sleep. She's like, and she, as soon as she would fall asleep, like, mom, you fell asleep. Wake up, watch this. And I feel so bad for that poor lady. So it's tough. Everyone has a tough time no matter what. So
for sure, man, for sure. Definitely agree.
So let me ask you this. What is the difference in kind of like scope of practice going from NP to DNP?
So yeah, I get a lot of questions on that specifically. So I always try to explain to people whenever they ask me that is, you know, the DNP is your actual educational degree, right? So if you're a physician, you have your MD, right? Which is your educational degree, but your actual title is a physician, right? So for NP, our actual job role is a nurse practitioner, but your education is different, right? So you can either be an NP and have your master's degree in nursing, or you can have your doctorate degree in nursing, or your doctor of nursing practice degree, so to speak. So it just depends on your educational journey that you decided to go to, and also what you kind of envision for yourself in the future. So if you're the type of person where you just want to work as a nurse practitioner and, you know, you don't really care much about, you know, teaching in the university level or really going into leadership or maybe running a company one day or becoming the chief nursing officer of a huge healthcare sector one day, then it'd probably make more sense for you kind of like financially just to do the master's route. Just because it pretty much, and that's all you need. You get the same amount of clinical hours, and you are kind of educated didactically in terms of the things that you need to do in order to function appropriately as a nurse practitioner. But if you are someone that you want to pretty much reach and attain the highest terminal degree possible in the field of nursing, and if you're someone who values education, who envisions themselves maybe teaching in the future, or maybe, you know, running your own practice in the future, or maybe leading a healthcare organization in the future, then it would make more sense for you to attain your DNP route. And so that's the reason why I did that, was because I wanted to do more. I didn't really see myself just like a cookie cutter, like a provider, so to speak. I didn't feel like I just wanted to just kind of do private practice outpatient and do that for the majority of my life. I felt like I wanted variety, and I knew that having my DNP would allow me to kind of, you know, try different things.
Right. Okay. Sweet, man. That's cool. That's good information to know. I had no idea. And honestly, I shamefully didn't even know DNP existed until I came across your profile, and I was like, whoa,
yeah.
DNP, what does that mean? That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know what? And that's kind of a common response, I think, even for the organization that I'm working with right now. I think I'm the very, there's only seven DNPs, and in terms of my location, since I work in Beverly Hills, they never came across a DNP before, so they didn't really know how to adjust me. They didn't really know like what the DNP education looked like, and I had to kind of explain that. And so I think it's great, because, you know, I take it upon myself as somewhat of someone who can kind of explain what a DNP does, what a doctoral nurse is, and how that kind of differs as opposed to someone who received their master's degree in nursing. nursing, and hopefully it would shed some light and again bring some parity in terms of the healthcare profession, because I believe nursing provides such a wealth of information, just because, you know, nursing, we are pretty much at the bedside, right? So we're there with the patient 8-12 hours at a time, right? And the physicians, even though they're pretty much overseeing the care, I mean, they don't really spend as much time with the patients. So I think nurses, especially advanced practice nurses, they definitely have a plethora of information, just because we all started off as a bedside nurse. So we kind of developed that bedside manner, so to speak, and we kind of, it's easier for us to kind of recognize and identify, you know, if the patient is doing well or if they're not doing well, just because we had so much more clinical experience, especially working and going to school at the same time, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool too, just to get you on here and kind of get a little a message out, because I think anyone, it just gives people listening another option within healthcare. There's so many options, but then
Here's
another one. That's pretty awesome.
Exactly. And like I said, I think we all, I mean, everyone in terms of the healthcare team, it's so amazing because we all have something unique to bring to the table, right? So, I mean, not there's not one person who will be able to know everything. Right. And so it's one of those things where we really have to rely on each other and lean on each other for their expertise and for their knowledge, because that's what makes the team better. And that's what would help the patient really get the most bang out of their buck, so to speak, and the most quality for their care. So, yeah, I definitely believe that we all have a lot to offer in terms of our own individualized experiences.
Absolutely. And then kind of looking at your path through, you know, nursing starting out and then up to now, how has your kind of day-to-day practice changed as your degrees progressed?
So it definitely changed for sure. Obviously, when I completed my bachelor's of nursing, right, you get a foundational terms of, you get a foundational knowledge in terms of how it is to work as a bedside nurse, right? You learn how to critically think, you learn how to assess a patient, evaluate a patient, you create a nursing diagnosis, which is not a medical diagnosis, but your own nursing diagnosis, and with that, you start to conceptualize and have a plan of care for the patient. So as a bachelor's degree nurse, I think the biggest thing that I learned was learning how to critically think, learning how to try to see a patient holistically, right? Not just what they're showing in terms of their physical manifestations, but also trying to incorporate their spiritual, their family and other personal values that may be influencing their care or how they're responding to treatment. And then when I started to pursue my DNP route, it added another layer, so to speak, on top of that, right? Because now I'm no longer just viewing my patient through the lens of a bedside nurse, right? Now I'm starting to view them more as a clinical provider. And I think that was something that was more exciting for me, because I already knew from the very beginning, even when I was in nursing school, like attaining my BSN, I knew for a fact that I wanted to have that increased sense of autonomy. I wanted to be able to kind of help dictate and plan and, you know, pretty much choose and also work together with the patient in terms of like trying to figure out what's the best sort of, you know, route that we can take to really help the patient get back to their normal everyday functioning. So as you go into your DNP route, you're now kind of focused or forced to kind of look things in a different lens, right? Now you're looking at a provider lens. And now, in addition to understanding and having that knowledge of critical thinking as a bedside nurse, now you're also learning how to work in collaboration with a team. You're starting to understand a little bit more in depth in terms of the psychopharmacology as well as the pathophysiology of what's going on in their body, starting to understand you know, again, like what the patient is going through, not just in a personal stance, but also, like, you know, their family history, their genetic predisposition, all the social stressors and personal stressors that can also be influencing kind of like their health and well-being as well. So the DNP really made me start to think more of as a provider, and I think that extra breadth of knowledge was really interesting and fun, because it makes you think outside the box, so to speak, as opposed to just kind of viewing it as like, I'm only here as a bedside nurse and I'm only taking care of them for like 8-12 hours. But now you're seeing these patients are going to be part of your caseload, right? So you're going to be seeing them indefinitely until either they get better, or, you know, until they, you know, you guys terminate your plan of care. But, you know, this is something that was I think interesting for me to learn.
Yeah, And how was it transitioning kind of from the bedside aspect to more of the advanced provider aspect?
The transition for me was actually not that bad. And I think the reason behind it was that I was very fortunate to have had such a breadth of experience in the clinical side. So, you know, in addition to, you know, having the majority of my experience in psychiatry, I also worked in the ER, right? I started off in the ER in Florida. I did that for about 6 months, and I also did some ICU experience as well. So I think having that medical knowledge, learning how to think critically and learning how to prioritize, and also taking into account that in terms of psychiatry, there's a lot of medical conditions that could potentially manifest itself as psychiatric symptoms. So it made me kind of open my eyes and understand that if someone is saying that I feel depressed or anxious, I'm not just going to assume that they're depressed and anxious. I have to make sure I order labs. I got to make sure that I have to take their medical history into account. I got to make sure that they're, you know, they're maybe not a history of their family life is doing okay. They're not a history of a sexual abuse or trauma or anything like that, right? Because in terms of psychiatry, we really have to focus it on the biopsychosocial model, right? And in terms of mental illness, we can't just state that if someone is just depressed, that's just what it is. You also have to look at the medical conditions, and that could also be manifesting itself as depression as well. So the transition for me was a little bit easier, like I said, just because I had more of experience at the bedside. And so being exposed and working closely with a lot of the physicians, the psychiatrists, the nurse practitioners there, and also working on the bedside for like in psychiatry, for like 2 years, 2.5 years, I was already familiar with what a bipolar patient looked like. I was familiar with what a borderline patient or someone who was schizophrenic or someone who was depressed. Like, I knew what to identify. So now as a provider, when patients come and see me, it's pretty natural for me, so to speak, because I already had that experience as a nurse. And I, since I spent a lot of time with the patient as a nurse, it made it much more easy kind of moving forward to kind of diagnose them and prescribe the medications that I felt would be appropriate.
Yeah, that's pretty like cool experience, kind of segueing directly into your current practice. And yeah, like you said, you know, you went to Florida for ER. I mean, that's a good place for psychiatric cases is Florida. So unfortunately, so Florida can be pretty crazy sometimes. But that's I don't know about Orlando, but I know in Miami, I would. Oof, that's got to be a crazy place for psychiatry down there, man. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I mean, like I was very fortunate to really have had that experience, just because I think being, again, as a nurse and having that ER experience, ICU experience, as well as inpatient psychiatric experience, it really taught me the importance of learning how to handle and de-escalate dysregulated patients, right? Patients who are irritable or angry, or patients who can pretty much lose their mind, so to speak. And, you know, I've learned how to communicate with them in a way where it's non-threatening and would hopefully calm them down. And having that experience, I think, really allowed me to kind of hone in my skills. So when I'm speaking and communicating with my patients now as a provider, it makes them feel more calm and at ease, which I feel is very important, because oftentimes there's that white coat syndrome, so to speak, right? Patients mm-hmm. are so scared when they're talking to their providers that they may fabricate or falsify information to kind of like lessen the intensity of what they're experiencing, because they're afraid of being judged, or they're afraid of, maybe, I don't know, they don't want to sound that what they're going through is worse than what it actually is. But I think having that experience in terms of learning how to de-escalate it and have therapeutic communication with my patient, I think has allowed my patient rapport to be more conducive and make them feel more calm, which has helped me, because if they're more calm, they're more willing to express themselves in a more truthful way, and that would help both of us in the long run to kind of figure out what we can do together to get them back to normal.
Right, totally agree with that. Totally agree. And so, looking kind of now recently, what is your typical kind of disorder that you come across, and maybe what are some kind of rare, more less frequent cases you see?
So I pretty much see everything. I mean, in terms of what I do on a daily basis, I guess the majority of diagnosis that I normally come across is depression, generalized anxiety, bipolar 1 and 2, as well as ADHD. I think those are the main diagnoses that I normally come across. And I guess it just, in terms of treatment approaches, it just varies on the person. You know, the thing about psychiatry is it's kind of like a very heuristic approach, so to speak. So it's a lot of trial and error. A lot of the times we know the neurotransmitters that are somewhat being affected with these medications, but we don't know exactly the true mechanism of action as to why some medications work better than others. So I always try to explain that to my patients. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, medications is not a cure for anything. And I always try to explain that to them, because oftentimes they have this misconception thinking that, you know, if they're depressed, I can just prescribe them Zoloft or Lexapro, and then they're, you know, the next day they're gonna feel like better and happy. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's just not how it works sometimes. And they might have to have multiple trials in terms of medications before we find a good one that actually works well for them, you know? So I think being transparent with my patients and trying to make sure that they are aware of that, it helps a lot. But in terms of the diagnosis, those are the main ones that I normally see.
Okay. That's pretty cool. And it's interesting. It's like that across pretty much every field. It's like, all right, I'm here, I'm sick, make me better.
Not necessarily
saying people don't want to work hard, but yeah, I think one of the hardest things as a patient to work hard in probably is psychiatry, because, you know, if you're a hypertensive patient, they can just stop eating certain things and they're going to improve no matter what. But to make real changes with your psyche, it's hard. It's got to be, I mean, it's tough, you know, and medication kind of does just part of the, is only part of the solution. So that's a hard one. That's a hard one to be a patient and a practitioner in. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess I'm very good at creating analogies to my patients to hopefully make it easier for them to understand, right? I always try to tell my patients, you know, think about it this way, you know, medication is kind of like fuel for your car, right? You can have a full tank of gas, but if you don't know how to operate your car, it's pretty much pointless, right? So I always try to explain it to them that, you know, at the end of the day, medications, again, it's not a cure for anything. You really need to have psychotherapy, which is a huge, huge component, which can help augment the effects of medications. And you also, they need to make these lifestyle modifications in their life, right? Whether that's eating better, right? Because processed foods can oftentimes cause patients to feel more sluggish or make them feel more tired, right? They need to make sure that they exercise, because there's a lot of research now and studies that are showing that there's neuroinflammation that's happening. And so making sure that you exercise daily at least 45 minutes, you know, to an hour, you know, every 3 to 4 times a week, you know, that would kind of help reduce the inflammation and obviously increase also dopamine as well, which can help them feel better about themselves, right? Help them feel more energetic and all that stuff. And also surrounding yourself with good people, positive people. I mean, oftentimes people are unaware of that. The people that we surround ourselves with, that can also play a huge impact in terms of how we feel. So I think when I explain that to them and explain to them that they still have to be an active participant, you know, in their treatment, I think that kind of changes the modality, because unfortunately I'm starting to realize that there's not a lot of patient education that's going on, unfortunately. And I think that's just because of the fact that as providers, we're getting inundated with so many patients, right? We're seeing maybe 15, 16, 20, 30 patients in one day. And so unfortunately we just don't have the opportunity to really educate patients on what they really need to do in order for them to recover. But that's my main thing. Trying to explain to these patients, like, you really need to take some accountability in your life in order for you to get better. Because if you don't, then, and it's not, you're really not going to get the most benefit out of anything. Right.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's pretty sweet. So now, just in your own opinion, what kind of makes a good practitioner in psychiatry? And now I want, like, you know, overall answer. I don't want you to just say me, you know, because obviously you're a good example. So don't say that. I need a specifics.
Oh, no. You know? No. I mean, for me, I'm still learning. I mean, obviously, I'm still relatively young in the field. I mean, I've only been practicing as a provider for 8 months, so there's still a plethora of things that I need to learn. But just in terms of what I've come across, and obviously working closely with other psychiatrists and, again, other advanced practice nurses who are nurse practitioners, I feel like the most important qualities and traits is, number one, they need to be compassionate. I think, you know, if you're in psychiatry but you're not compassionate, it's going to be very, very difficult to really establish a good rapport with the patient, because at the end of the day, there's still a very strong stigma surrounding mental health, right? Just to put things in perspective, I mean, for right now, I have a bunch of people, or had a bunch of patients in the past where maybe they're diagnosed, I diagnosed them as bipolar, but they come to me saying that they're depressed and anxious, right? So, but once I started to evaluate them and started to kind of assess them even more, I started to realize that their symptoms is more closely aligned to bipolar. So when I kind of brought that up about the potential of them having bipolar disorder, they cried because, you know, they feel like they don't want to be considered bipolar, right? Because I think in social media, in terms of what's going on in the world, I think it's more socially acceptable to say that I'm just depressed or anxious, but there's still a lot of stigma surrounding other diagnoses like bipolar disorder or borderline disorder or schizophrenia, right? And I think if you don't have compassion for people, if you're not able to show that, patients would be would have a lot harder time trusting you and really being transparent and honest with you. So I think compassion is really important, especially to be a good psychiatric provider. I also believe that they need to engage in active listening, because the number one complaint that I get from a lot of patients who may have transferred from another provider to me was that their past provider was not an active listener, or they just felt like they weren't really engaged with the patient. And patients can catch that, you know, patients can tell if you're actually paying attention to them or if you're just really not really present there. So you really need to actively listen to your patient. You really have to make sure that you're present, whether that's 30 minutes or 1 hour with that patient, to really try to show that you're focused and that you really want to get to know them and you really want to get to understand what it is that exactly that they need help with. And again, patients can get a sense of that. And then I think just in terms of time, I think the last one that I think is important is patience. I think providers in psychiatry who are excellent providers, they have a wealth of patience. And these are people where they understand that in terms of psychiatry, I mean, we're not going to see improvement right away. Again, on average for SSRIs and most psychiatric medications, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks for us to actually notice any improvement in their symptoms. And again, in terms of patients, you know, sometimes you might get patients who may be difficult, and it's very important for us to kind of maybe take a step back and just kind of take a deep breath and understand that, you know, you know, they may not have control over that. You know, maybe because of their psychiatric condition, you know, it may be difficult for us to kind of expect them to answer questions directly. Maybe they're very tangential and they kind of go from different places to different topics. So I think we just having that patience and that understanding that, you know, what they're showing, it's not them personally, but rather it's a manifestation of their mental disorder. I think having that understanding will definitely allow the provider to feel a little bit more, they won't add any extra pressure to themselves, so to speak, right? You provide yourself a little bit more grace as a provider. Mm-hmm. So I think just learning those three, incorporating those three into your daily practice, and then accepting the fact that we can only do so much, we can control the things that we can only control, right? And then just do the best that you can. And I think as long as you do that and you're honest with the patients and you're transparent and you really show the patient that you're trying to really help them as best as you can and not make promises and show that, you know, I can't promise you that this is going to really cure you, but at the end of the day, I mean, I'm going to do my best to really help you. Patients reciprocate to that. So I think we as providers, we need to do a better job at communicating and relaying that message across.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's interesting that one of the points you said was you commonly hear, you know, poor listener, their previous provider was a poor listener.
Yeah.
I mean, listening is so important in any aspect of medicine, but like, man, psychiatry, you know, even if you're going just off the stereotypes that most people might have of just like, you know, outpatient, direct, you know, 1 hour setting. I mean, how can you do that, let alone the more advanced pieces of inpatient psych and everything else, mm-hmm. and not be a good listener? You know, it's like, it's crazy, but I'm sure I would say, unfortunately, probably more than 50% might be in that pool of just bad listeners or jaded and not willing to kind of just change. So it's good that we have new people coming in, new blood coming in. So like yourself, that's awesome.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is unfortunate, like you mentioned. And I think maybe as providers get older, they become more complacent, and then they feel that, you know, they feel maybe that they don't really need to actively listen, maybe because they feel like I've heard it a bunch of times. But I think that's a wrong way to approach it, right? Because even if you have two patients who come in for depression, I mean, each of their situations is completely different, right? Just depending on where they grew up, what was their socioeconomic status, their family history, you know, their current life stressors. I mean, they both might come for depression, but at the end of the day, the approach is it's going to be different, right? So I think it's very important for us to, I think, remain humble at the end of the day, right? Regardless of how many years of experience you have, regardless of, you know, how many patients you've successfully treated, I think at the end of the day, as providers, whether that's DNP nurse practitioners, physicians, PAs, anyone else, as a provider, I think it's important for us to always understand that we were always students first. We're always going to be forever students, and we won't know everything, right? And that's okay. And I think the sooner we are able to kind of accept that and remain humble and grounded, I think the more, the better we're going to put ourselves, you know, in terms of the future and hopefully providing and the best care for these patients and as much patients as we can, as long as we're still alive and practicing.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Those are strong words and definitely good advice. So I'm definitely down to do my part. Hopefully we can get as many people on board and the people who are already doing that behind us, you know, so that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah,
that'd be
pretty cool. I definitely agree, man.
So we've already been crushing like 45 minutes already. So maybe I can switch and just ask you a little bit about you. I'd love to get, you know, I think we got a really cool understanding of DNP and kind of just you as a practitioner. I'd love to kind of just hear about a little bit of you outside of that as well, if that's cool.
Yeah, of course, man.
Sweet. So, you know, one of the first things that's funny is we both graduated high school in 08. It's kind of crazy how long ago that is, you know, it's kind of scary, right?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to kind of think about it, right? Because we're already in 2020, so what, it's been 12 years pretty much since we graduated high school.
Yep.
Yeah. So scary. Did you already knew from high school that you wanted to become a physician? Was this something that you always knew that you wanted to do, or is this something that just kind of came out at, you know, maybe when you were in college?
So it's funny because my whole life I wanted to be a physician, and then my like senior year I'm getting ready to apply for school, and I got this just like, I don't know what happened, but I changed my mind. I decided I wanted to do engineering and I wanted to work in water purification in third world countries. That was like my new passion. I just kind of got it like senior year. I was like, this is it. This is my life calling. And so I went to North Carolina State University, which is like a top 5 engineering program in the country. And I started out in chemical engineering, and I was like, man, this is going to be awesome. And then I hated it, man. Like, that's just not my kind of science. Chemi is just not my kind of science. And so I switched back to pre-med, and then that kind of got me back on track, I think, in life. So, but no, I didn't know. I pretty much knew all along. I had maybe had like a 1 or 2 year hiatus. And other than that, I was pretty much on track. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sound like to me that you had somewhat of an inclination that you did wanted to go to medicine. And I think after you've had your experience with Chem E, then it kind of started to reinforce the fact that maybe medicine was more your calling, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like thermo and stuff like that just wasn't my jam. That's not my type of science. I'm more like cell bio, you know, anatomy, physiology stuff. So I realized pretty quick that was not it, you know. I was like, that's not it. So
I think I find that super interesting, just because, I mean, I guess from my story, I never even dreamt that I was going to become a provider of any sort at all in high school. And me, nursing was not even something that was in the back of my mind in high school. It only happened when in senior year, you know, when you have your college, kind of like your college, I guess, not tour, but, you know, your college fair, so to speak, right? Where you're mm-hmm. going and you're going to different colleges and you're seeing what majors there are and everything. I don't know why, but nursing just popped up in my head. But the funny thing about that is when I told my family that I wanted to do nursing, they gave me such a perplexed look because science and math was like my lowest subjects. and I'm being completely honest, right? In elementary school and even in high school, like, I never got anything higher than like a B minus in anything in terms of science and math. I never got an A in anything in terms of in natural sciences, biology, chemistry, physics, or anything like that, or even math. Like, I hated math. So when my parents told me, like, you do realize that nursing is going to involve pretty much heavy science and math, right? But I think at that time I was just so compelled to do it. I don't know why. I think, you know, you can call it a calling or whatever, but it was one of those things where I didn't allow that to deter me. And I just said, like, I don't know, I feel like nursing, it's such a compassionate profession. I said, like, that'd be something interesting to do. But it's just kind of funny looking back on it now, just kind of the journey that I went through, especially someone who's not naturally gifted in science and math, from someone who's, this is not something that I've always enjoyed studying about, but to be where I'm at now and you know, obviously being as a provider now, I think it shows how much how much I've grown out of those 12 years. So it's kind of interesting that you know, to see our paths happen.
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about healthcare, man, and one of the many pluses of it for me and why I switched was there is really, there's not math. There's no math. Like once you get into it, there's no math.
Exactly. Which is,
like, amazing. And I hate math personally. So
yeah,
I'm more of a, like, how does it work? Not, I guess it's, I don't know if it's why or how, but I'm not the other one. Let's put it that way. I'm whatever it is, I'm not the opposite side. I'm not like going to sit down and crunch numbers to understand why this drug works. I'm more just like, it works. Boom. Give it to the patient. Let's go. Let's get them out of
exactly.
here.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And that was such a nice realization to be like, oh, no, there's no math when I'm actually in medical school. This is sweet. Heck yeah. I like this.
So. But you had to do math for prerequisites, right? You had to do your college, right? So yeah, I didn't even want to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I was trying to find a way if I can somehow even just skip, like, my college math or my statistics, because any version of math scared me, right? Even though, like you said, there's not really a lot of math involved in healthcare, but I mean, like, you still have to know how to, you know, make dosage calculations, right? You still have to have that basic understanding of statistics and stuff like that. So, I mean, at the time, I tried my best to really avoid that. But then when I started to realize, like, there's no other way around it, I really gotta get through it. And fortunately for me, I met, you know, my undergraduate teacher, Mr. Kim. Shout out to Mr. Kim. And in college, he was the one teacher that really made math easy for me, because he explained it in a way where, as long as you know the formula, you just have to plug and play, and then, you know, you can solve pretty much anything. And I think him saying that, it made me not so scared of the numbers and made me understand that as long as I understand, like, what the formula is and how to go about it, then, you know, it's pretty much straightforward. And so that kind of changed my perception on that. And it made me less afraid of, like, numbers and everything. But yeah, but I tried my best to avoid it when I was in college, just because I was so afraid. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm the same way. So what about when you were, like, a kid? What did you think? What was kind of your dream job as a kid?
I wanted to do something entertainment. I really wanted to do something, whether it's music or maybe acting in movies or TV shows. I was very intrigued by that. Like, in high school, I was in choir and I was in a lot of musicals. As a kid, I was part of the Los Angeles Children's Choir, which is like a professional children's choir. And I was exposed to kind of like the entertainment industry, so to speak, with that, because we were able to perform at the Walt Disney Concert Hall, the Hollywood Bowl. I performed in, like, various productions at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. So, like, being exposed to that and seeing that firsthand, like, that was something that I was really passionate about. And that was something that I really wanted to do, actually. That was something that was my goal and dream, so to speak, was to work in the entertainment industry. Or maybe do something in music, because I love music too, and I play the guitar. I dabble a little bit in the piano, and I actually was classically trained in the violin. So as I grew up, I also loved the idea of me maybe, you know, writing songs and sharing the songs that I've written, you know, out to the world, which was something that kind of happened, actually, because in 2015, I was able to record my album. I was able to record, like, my first full-length album in San Diego. And that was really fun, because I was able to actually share a lot of the music that I've written and actually share it with the world. And that was something that I felt a huge satisfaction and gratification from nursing, because obviously recording in a recording studio is not easy, and it's not cheap. It's very expensive, especially if you have someone who's producing your music for you. So I'm very thankful for nursing, because nursing actually gave me the opportunity to fund my album and actually be able to record that and at least achieve that little bit of dream that I had when I was younger to do
that. That's sweet. But, yeah. Yeah, heck yeah, man. That's awesome. And what genre was it?
It's a mix of different things, but I guess you can, like, vaguely say it's pop music, so to speak. But I was, like, growing up, I loved jazz and R&B, like, and, like, those were the really the crux of my foundational like music. I loved R&B. I loved jazz music. And then obviously having my classical background, like being in a choir, I had a deeper appreciation for that. And obviously as you grow and you age, you start to develop an appreciation of different types of music, whether that's country music, right? Rock and roll, 80s rock and all that stuff. Like the sounds start to kind of develop and kind of mix and combine, and you start to develop your own unique sound as a become of that. So that's something that I was very happy and that was something that I really enjoyed, and I'm just glad that again nursing gave me that opportunity to make that happen, you know, even if it wasn't to the level that I wanted it to be when I was younger, but it still was able to reach a lot of people. And it was actually funny, I had a patient not too long ago, like a last week, who when we were in the interview, he said, hey Dr. Yamas, I just wanted to say I really love your music. And I'm like, what? I thought I was playing music maybe in the background that he was like listening to. And it's like, no, I typed your name online and I came across your music and I listened to it and it's really, really good. And that like that was so funny, because I had to kind of like, you know, had to reel the patient back in and go back into the interview. But it was really touching to hear that, you know, this complete stranger was able to listen to my music and he liked it. And at the end of the day, that's all I can ask for, you know, for people to say that they listened to it and they enjoyed it, or, you know, they liked what they heard. And that's everything to me, right?
Yeah, that's sweet. That's awesome. Yeah, to have like a completely random person appreciate it. It's not like, because your mom's obviously gonna like it, you know, everyone's mom's gonna like it, right? But to have a stranger, those are the hardest people to win over, is the stranger. So that's pretty sweet, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. And I think that's where I just find a lot of joy now. I mean, right now I've kind of transitioned now more into, you know, more into explaining you know, psychiatry, being an advocate for mental health, being an advocate for nursing and DNP and a nurse practitioner profession. I've started to accept and embrace like my new role now and the responsibilities that I have now as a healthcare clinician. But it is still very nice to know that, you know, in some way, shape or form, no matter how small it was, to have my music at least touch someone, you know, positively. I mean, even if it's just one person, I mean, that's all that matters.
It's a huge win still. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a huge win. Exactly.
Absolutely, man. So another question I like to ask, kind of we're talking about childhood stuff, is what did you get in trouble for as a kid?
Not studying.
go figure, right?
Not studying. Yeah, you know what? Again, I'm the oldest of four siblings, and it's pretty funny because, again, growing up, I was, I guess, one of those kids where I can just, you know, if we had a huge test coming up in school, I would probably study the night before and do still pretty well, meaning that I would still get maybe a B or a B plus on it. So in elementary school and even in high school, I never really studied, so to speak. I never really knew how to study because I was still a kid, and I guess, you know, growing up in the 90s, right, you can attest to that. Like, we had a good childhood, right? That was the advent of, like, cartoons, right? We had Pokemon, we had Power Rangers, we had all the... We had the advent of everything. The 90s was really the best time because, you know, we were exposed to so many cool things. And so I guess that created a distraction for me because I had a very happy childhood, so to speak. And so school was one of those things where I was never really like passionate about. I was never competitive. I didn't care if I had like all A's or whatever. I just enjoyed watching Saturday morning cartoons and eating cereal. And I just, that was just it for me. So I would always get in trouble because I would always never study. My parents would maybe hear from my classmate, like they have a huge test and then they see me watching TV and are like, why aren't you studying? Don't you have a huge test or whatever? And I would be like, oh yeah, I studied already, right? But then I didn't really study. So I think that the ability of like not studying, even though it probably wasn't great, I think it somewhat played a huge role in terms of me being where I'm at now, because when I went to nursing school, again, like, remember, elementary school and high school, I didn't know how to study. So when you transition to college and then you're specializing or you're concentrating on something as highly scientific and intensive as like nursing, right? you really should have developed some sort of structure or some sort of good study habits. But since I didn't have any, obviously I didn't do well. Like, I failed. Like, I had so many D's and like F's like in my entire life because I just thought that I can kind of breeze on by just how I was when I was in elementary school and high school and still get a 3.3, 3.4, right? I didn't realize that in nursing, you really have to sacrifice and take time and study and make these calendars and really plan out your day, because if you don't, then you're not gonna make it. And so I needed that fail. I needed to feel that I was at the bottom of the bottom, because it really forced me to take a good long look at myself in the mirror and really ask myself, is this the best that you can do? And I'm telling you, that's what I literally did, right? I got rejected after I got kicked out of my first undergraduate in nursing. I got rejected from everywhere, even community college that I did my prereqs at. Like, they didn't even want to accept me, right? And all these other schools around me didn't want to accept me. So it was just kind of like, I had to look myself in the mirror and ask myself, like, is this really the best that I can do? And I said, and I knew in my heart it wasn't. So it got to the point where I said, like, you know what, if I get another opportunity out there, if there's a school out there who's willing to take a chance on me, like, I have to give it my best, and I'm gonna try my best. And if I still fail, then at least at the end of the day, I can tell myself, like, hey, you know what? You know, at least I can look myself in the mirror and be proud of myself and say, like, I did the best that I could, right? But I didn't think that I could live with myself if I didn't give myself a fighting shot, so to speak. So fast forward now, obviously, I'm just very thankful for the school that accepted me, and they gave me that chance, and I was able to prove to myself that I'm not quote-unquote dumb, right? Because that's what I thought I was. I thought I was stupid. I thought I was, you know, someone who maybe not be smart in science and math. But then I started to realize that it's just because I didn't apply myself enough. And once I realized that, then it just became, I kind of transformed, and I became a new person, so to speak. And then I'm, you know, so that's why I'm very proud of that. And I guess the whole not studying part, I think that kind of helped in my growth and my development in changing my trajectory.
Right. Sweet, man. That's awesome. That's cool. And it's cool to just kind of like hear the growth and kind of you yourself see it and witness it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I try my best now to just, if I see people out there who's maybe going through something similar like me, I try my best to encourage them, because I didn't have anyone like that to encourage me. I really didn't have anyone who told me, Jonathan, you can do it, right? I really had to dig deep in myself and really be my biggest supporter. And so if I can somehow inspire people to know that though they have someone like me who's on their team, who knows how it is to really start from the bottom down, man. I was really from the bottom. Like, no nursing school wanted to touch me. No nursing school wanted to even accept me. But to be able to kind of rise above the adversity and to kind of get to where I am now, it's really something that I really hold such a huge pride, and I really hang my hat to that, because that really helped me to understand that it's important to stay humble, to stay grounded, you know, because at the end of the day, all this stuff can be taken away from you. So I think as providers, we always have to remind ourselves that no matter how high we get, no matter how many awards or recognition or accolades that we get, it's, you know, at the end of the day, we all have our own unique story, and our best thing that we can do for ourselves and for our professions is to use our story for the greater good and hopefully inspire other people to achieve what they want in their life as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Totally agree. So that's really sweet. So I think, you know, it's the four wrap up questions I usually ask. It's funny, you've kind of answered them already, unfortunately. So I hope I haven't tapped you out of good, like, wisdom words. So, That's like, those are really good words. I think that it's really important to kind of just know yourself and then also just watch yourself grow. I mean, it's important to say, like, okay, I've hit this milestone and now I can keep doing better as I've already grown. It's important. So that's awesome.
True. Exactly.
So, man, we just hit an hour. I think maybe we'll ask the wrap up questions and maybe get you out of here. You sound good?
Yeah. Sounds good, man. For sure.
All right, sweet. So I like to ask these four questions to every guest, and, you know, we'll take as much time as you want to flesh it out, and then we'll go from there. So the first question is, has practicing nursing been what you expected?
Yes and no. So I think that's a two-part question. Yes, in the sense of it, you know, bedside nursing per se, and understanding, like, what they teach you in school, right? The things that you learn in school. It was what I expected. But when I say no, it's also understanding that there's so many different nuances to nursing that the nursing school cannot teach you, right? And I think that you can also kind of relate to this as a physician, right? School in and of itself, since it's so structured, they try to expose us to different clinical scenarios that we might normally see in an everyday basis, but obviously you won't really know how it is to function as a registered nurse unless you're actually one and when you actually have a license, so to speak, right? So I think in nursing, even though they did teach you how to critically think, right, they teach you how to, you know, what this medication is or what's diabetes or how to read this EKG, right, they don't explain the other nuances, the things that you have to go through in terms of like knowing how to talk to providers or knowing how to relay information or understanding the various, I guess, the administrative stuff that's associated with nursing, and as well as the hospital setting, understanding, you know, insurances and all that other stuff and just all the things that nursing can pretty much encapsulate that only happens in real life. I think that's something that obviously you won't really get a chance to know unless you're actually working on the floors per se and being exposed to that on a daily basis. So to answer your question, yes and no, right? They give you a good sort of, they give you a good superficial kind of like basic understanding, but you won't really know what it truly means to be a nurse once you're actually down there in the trenches, like taking care of your patients, working your 8-12 hour shifts, like not having a time to eat your lunch, not being able to go to the bathroom, you know, having difficult conversations with various nurses, right? Like maybe you're butting heads with nurses, and also how to handle those situations, how to handle with a difficult doctor or how to handle a difficult patient, right? Those are things that they don't really teach you, but like over time you become better and then you learn from people around you and you kind of create your own version of the type of nurse that you want to be. So that's what I've learned, and I've had a lot of great mentors and maybe not so great mentors along the way, but you know, being exposed to that made me realize like, okay, this is what I want to do. Like, oh, I don't really like how he or she did that. I want to make sure I don't do that, right? So, you know, that's something that to take in consideration, I guess.
Right. Okay. And that kind of feeds into the second question, which is, in your opinion, what are keys to success in nursing?
Yeah, I think the keys to success in nursing is number one, you know, you have to go into nursing for the right reason. I think especially now with the advent of social media, nursing has kind of been glamorized, or it's kind of been now created as this profession where it looks so cool, right? Like you get all these attractive men and female nurses in scrubs, like doing badass poses, and they look so cool with their stethoscope and everything like that. And that's all great and everything. And you know, and they talk about how great the pay is and the life stability. But at the end of the day, what people have to understand is that you really have to go into nursing, you know, for the right reasons. And you really have to go into nursing, you know, not just because that you think it's a great profession, but also because that you really want to help patients to the best of their ability. You really believe in, you know, healing patients holistically and really making a positive difference. And that includes, there's going to be nights where you don't feel heroic, right? There's gonna be nights where, you know, the shift is just gonna really hit you hard, right? There's gonna be nights where you're just exhausted mentally, physically, emotionally. Like you have to be prepared for that. You know, you have to be prepared for the good days, the days where, you know, a patient will tell you like, thank you so much, you saved my life. And then there's gonna be bad days where the patient that you've tried so hard to save, like unfortunately passes away, right? So you have to understand that there's a duality in nursing. There's the good and the bad, but as long as you're going in it for the right reason, then none of that should matter, because at the end of the day you're feeling a sense of gratification and satisfaction that no matter what the outcome is, that you've still done the very best that you can to really help this patient and their family members, you know, receive the best care possible. So I always try to tell nurses and prospective nurses students, just make sure that if you're going to go into nursing, again, it's a great profession. I have no qualms about it. I mean, it's one of the professions that I feel has provided me a platform to be able to use my story to inspire and empower others. But again, I want them to realize that at the end of the day, it's not about the money. It's not about the glory or the fame or the respect that you receive from nursing. Rather, you know, it really takes someone special to work in healthcare, you really have to have a huge heart, and you really have to have a passion to really want to help these people. Because like I said, at the end of the day, it's not easy, right? And in order for you to be successful, you have to have that mindset.
Oof, man, totally agree. So I'm glad I haven't tapped you out of good wisdom yet, man. That's awesome.
No, yeah.
The next question, though, is kind of along those lines again. It's, you know, you've gone through a lot of training and things like that. So maybe looking back to current NP students or even current nursing students or even pre-nursing students, anyone kind of on their way up, what is your advice to them as they pursue their next stages of reaching goals in healthcare?
So my advice for nursing students, wherever they are in terms of their scholastic journey, is to kind of take a step back. Make sure you do your research first and foremost, right? So whether you're a pre-nursing student considering going to school for nursing, you know, take some time to research. Which path do you want to go? Like I said, you know, earlier in this interview, there's the hard thing about nursing, unfortunately, is that there's so many different avenues to nursing, right? Do you want to start as a licensed vocational nurse, or do you want to go straight and get your bachelor's degree in nursing, right? What goal do you have for yourself? Like, where do you envision yourself working? Do you just want to be in bedside, or do you also want to become an educator, or do you want to become an advanced practice provider, or do you want to maybe run a healthcare clinic one day? Like, you need to kind of like ask yourself these difficult questions, because that way it would help create some sort of blueprint in order for you to navigate your way through your journey. So number one, have a plan. Figure out what it is that you want to do, right? And figure out what path would make most sense to you, because again, everyone's situations is different. Some people might have more financial freedom than others. You know, some people, maybe this might be their second career, so maybe they're not able to go to school full-time. Maybe they need to go to school part-time. So try to reassess and reevaluate your priorities and what you need to do in order for you to get to where you want to be. And then second, once you figure that out, it's very, very important to surround yourself with good people. You know, you want to make sure that you surround yourself with like-minded individuals. You know, in nursing school, whether that's undergraduate or even graduate school, you're going to come across people who may not share your same mindset. So it's very important to remove those people who may be toxic or may hold you back in your life, and to make sure you surround yourself with like-minded individuals. Because again, you know, if you surround yourself with people who are the same as you, it's only gonna make you more accountable and would help push you to achieve your dreams that much faster, right? And then I guess in third, always make sure, try your best to be organized and try your best to prioritize your time wisely. I think that's very, very important. Again, nursing is not for the faint of heart. So one of the biggest thing that really helped me was creating a calendar. Because, you know, making sure having a calendar that you can kind of like look at and where you've kind of written down when certain tests are due or when certain assignments are due, when your clinicals are, I think it makes it easier for you to kind of look at it at a wider scope, so you can kind of plan your day accordingly. And once you see that, again, it makes you more accountable. And at the end of the day, you really have no other excuse, right? Especially if you put everything down to paper. So again, I always try to tell people, if you have any, you know, dreams, or if you have anything that you want to do, the number one thing that you want to make sure is write it down, right? Because if you just think that you're gonna study, like, oh, I'm gonna study later tomorrow, or I'm gonna study later today, you know, chances are you're not gonna accomplish that, right? You know, dreams are just dreams if you don't write them down, right? So you have to make sure that you write it down, make sure that you keep yourself accountable, make sure that they are attainable goals that you can do. And you know, if you do all those things, if you do your research, if you surround yourself with good people, and you organize your time wisely, then you should be successful.
Absolutely. Can't deny any of that. So thank you for sharing that. And
of course,
the last question is, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to do everything over to get back to where you are today, would you do it all over again?
I think I would say yes. And that even includes me failing again, because I think having myself fail and go through the adversity and the obstacles that I had to endure, I think that really changed that trajectory and really kind of helped kind of create the version that I am right now, the person that I'm speaking to you, right? I think if I didn't go through the adversity, so I just went through nursing pretty much straight through and I didn't have any issues or hardships growing up, I think that I'd be here speaking. I don't even know. I probably would be content just being a bedside nurse. I don't think I would have developed the drive to pursue something greater. And I think that's just because of the fact that I think everyone needs some sort of adversity growing up. I think everyone needs some sort of hardship, right? At the end of the day, it's your story. I think everyone wants to have that Cinderella story, that story where you come from nothing and then you work hard. And, you know, once you start to work hard, you're able to get to become the person that you've never even imagined or dreamed that you can become. But it's because of those adversities that shape you into who you are today. So if I was looking, ask my 10-year-old self, I would, you know, I would just tell them to continue to do what you're doing, but also understand that, you know, at the end of the day, don't beat yourself up too hard about it. Just try to navigate your life as best as you can. Just try to make the most out of the opportunities that are given to you. And at the end of the day, you'll be just fine. You know, as long as you continue to surround yourself with good people and rely on your faith and understand that, you know, with God by your side, anything is possible. Even if you feel like you've pretty much hit nothing and you're at the worst of your worst, you know, having that faith and allowing myself to use that as a source of strength, I felt like was really important in catapulting me to where I am. So,
mm-hmm. Awesome, man. That's sweet, man. So I really appreciate the kind of the insight into your career and just kind of you as a person. I think it's been an awesome discussion. Now I feel bad because the whole time I've just been grilling you kind of. Do you have anything that you wanted to share or any questions you wanted to ask me?
No, I mean, like, I just want to say again, Ever, like, thanks so much for obviously allowing me to be a part of your podcast. I think it's wonderful that you're going out and interviewing, you know, different people in healthcare to provide and kind of shed some light into their own profession. So hopefully this can maybe, you know, give some insight and some clarity to prospective nursing students or students who are interested in becoming a psych NP. Hopefully, you know, this will kind of inspire them to kind of move forward. And hopefully if your listeners are out there, if they have a question or concern, if they want to reach out to me personally, you know, they can definitely reach out to me, you know, via my Instagram, which I'm sure you're going to, you know, put here on your, you know, somewhere in your,
yeah, it'll be in the show in notes thing. And yeah. I'll tag it on the Instagram page as well, so we can make sure that anyone needing advice can get in touch with you.
Yeah, but again, thank you so much, you know, Everett. I think what you're doing is really great, and I wish you continued success, man. I think it's really cool that you're allowing to use your platform as a way to kind of shed some light and show other people the various specialties and the different roles and professions that are in healthcare, because I think people just think of doctor, nurse, and that's pretty much it. That's what comprises the healthcare system. But I think
yeah, it would be much more.
You know, I think there's so much more. It's a disservice to all our other healthcare, you know, brothers and sisters, whether that's physician assistants, pharmacists, respiratory therapists, you know, psychologists, therapists, social workers, everyone else that I can't think of at this time. But there's such a huge spectrum of different specialties that anyone can go to, and I think it's important for us to continue to shed some light and highlight them and show their stories.
Absolutely. And I have a lot of those things you said already, I have already recorded. I just haven't edited and published yet, so I'm trying to hit just as much as I can, and it's just been really fun learning about the different fields and people's stories within those fields, like just like yourself, for example. It's a really cool just introduction to DNP, and then, you know, learning about your music stuff, I mean, that's awesome. So it's just been really fun, and I guess it's kind of been for a selfish reason I've done it, just for me, because it's fun. So I really enjoy it, and getting that message out there has been really, really great.
Well, again, that's where it lies, right? I mean, like, if you're really passionate and you enjoy something, I mean, that's what matters in the end. So again, I'm very thankful that you've allowed me to be a part of this. I'm very humbled, and yeah, you know, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate your time as well. Thanks so much, kind of gassing me up, man. I appreciate that. But really, it's, you know, you're the guest, and I really appreciate your time. So thanks so much.
Of course, my pleasure, Everett.
Well, I really appreciate it again, and I'll keep in touch once everything's ready. It's going to be a couple weeks. I'm behind just because of residency's killing me, but I will keep in touch, and once everything's ready to go, I'll let you know.
Okay, man. Well, it's awesome to talk to you, and yeah, hopefully we can collaborate and talk soon, maybe sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Appreciate it so much. So have a great one and enjoy the West Coast.
All right, man. Take care, man. I'll see you soon. All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye. All right. Bye.
That was Dr. Yamas, DNP in Los Angeles, California. Thank you so much for tuning in. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.